session number 22344, Reel 6.
Major Grace, Reel 6. I think you were saying that the attack on Pantelleria was going to be a brigade attack.
Yes, and we were fully briefed about exactly where each company was to go. It was a very rocky island, of course, and it was going to be quite a difficult operation to scale up the cliffs and all the rest of it, and we didn't know quite how the defence was going to be organised. All we knew was that it was Mussolini's impregnable fortress. Mm-hmm. But the main topic to begin with was the bombing, and we approached in full daylight, about midday, and sure enough we saw these relays of bombers going over, and they did a marvellous job, and soon the whole of the island was one great huge mountain of smoke coming from the explosions. And just before we were going to land, a message came through: the whole island has surrendered. And so, great rejoicing, we didn't have to attack anything. And so eventually, after a bit of sort of organising the different ships, we all landed one after the other in the harbour, quite a small harbour, and we went to our designated part of the island. There were a lot of the native Pantellerians. Oh, you've missed it.
Come on.
And they gave us cheers. They were so pleased. The bombing's finished. Fortunately, although there'd been such a tremendous barrage from the air, they'd all managed to go into their caves and trenches and shelters, and there were very few casualties from the bombing at all, although very great damage was done.
Did you see the defences of Pantelleria when you were there?
They weren't very significant at all. What you might call the German army, no, the Italian army, I mean, was very sparsely. So how they thought it was going to be impregnable, I don't know.
Could it be another case of Mussolini's bombast?
Yes, I think so. I think it was. So anyway, that was very happily achieved, and I was sent up with my platoon to the top of a little hill, I think about as high as, say, Beachy Head, not very high, overlooking the harbour. And we had a very happy time there. The German came over and started to bomb the harbour beneath us, but we were high enough to be able to blaze off with our Bren guns, and we claimed at least two German planes shot down, because we, directly after they'd passed over our small arms fire, we saw the smoke coming down, and so we at least claimed two victories there. But they dropped quite a lot of bombs on the harbour with rather a bad aim, because the huge spouts coming up from the water, but very little damage was done on the harbour. There was one small ship that was definitely sunk by the bombs, and that was about all.
When you were on Pantelleria, you mentioned seeing the locals. Did you see anything of the Italian army who'd been supposed to defend it?
Not at all, no. At least I didn't, I suppose. They were mainly concentrated in the harbour, so no doubt some other unit will have rounded them up, got them into the harbour and disposed of. But on my little hill, you see, I and my platoon were all alone. And it was a very happy day. I think it was Whit Sunday when we were there, or some bank holiday, and we thought how happy we are to be here, because there was a house which had been bombed, but for some extraordinary reason, a lot of the interior of the house was absolutely untouched. And there was some beautiful china. It was a lovely house, obviously a rich family, and part of it had been demolished by the bombs. So once we settled down, all the men of my platoon went to and did everything they can to restore the house. We swept up all the rubble and we dusted all the dust from the dining table, laid out all the china, which amazingly wasn't even chipped. And so we had a very good 3 or 4 days there.
Had you had anything to do with the Italian army before? Had you come across them at all in Tunisia?
Not at all. Mm. Not the Italians. Mm. We were up against the Hermann Göring division. Mm. Not the Italians at all.
When you were going to attack Pantelleria, do you know how you were supposed to have done it, to have got ashore and got inland?
Well, yes, each unit had its own little patch to capture, and mine would have been a very difficult one because we would have had quite a steep climb up this hill, not actually a rock climb, but it would have been a very, very difficult attack indeed. I wasn't looking forward to it.
Had your soldiers been trained in rock climbing?
Not rock climbing, no. But as a matter of fact, in when we were still in Africa, I did do one bit of rock climbing training up this mountain that I think its name was Monte Ressas, and there was quite a lot of rock and they had a very good instructor, so that was all part of the training we did to fill in between one campaign and the other.
So they could have scaled the cliffs then?
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. But to do that under fire as well, it really would have been terrifying. So thank goodness we didn't have to.
And how long were you on Pantelleria before you were moved on?
I think about a fortnight or 10 days perhaps. So it was a rest cure in itself. And then after that we realised that we'd got to do more intensive training, so we went back to the same old site in Tunisia and did quite a bit of serious training then for something we didn't know what, but we thought it would probably be Sicily, because by then Sicily had already been started.
When you were doing this intensive training, were you learning new things, or was it simply refreshing old skills and bringing them up to scratch?
I think it was only old skills up to scratch. I don't think we did anything new, except possibly this rock climbing. That would be something quite different.
Yes.
I think that was about all. Yes. Oh, one thing I haven't mentioned. I can't remember whether it was before or after Pantelleria. I think it must have been before. Very soon after the fall of Tunis, I should have mentioned this before, there were countless thousands of Germans all assembled into one great big prison camp. Got a picture of it here. And they were all had to be protected, of course, by us, as probably other units as well, for all I can remember. And I'll find it after. My particular job arose once again because I spoke German, and I was made the liaison officer with the German field hospital, which was very, very active, full of Germans, British, Americans, all being brought in with serious wounds, some of them dying. And so I had to liaise with the German surgeons, which a tremendous lot of organization needed, as you can imagine, in a fully fledged hospital with all the funerals to be arranged and more supplies to be brought in, water, innumerable administration to be done. And then, of course, I had to do all the liaison with the chief surgeon and with the other doctors. And I got to know these doctors very well indeed. In fact, they were fine men. They weren't fighting soldiers and they weren't Nazis. In fact, I've got a whole chapter on that. And so that was a great experience.
Did you discuss the war and politics?
A lot, a great deal.
What sort of views did they have then?
Well, for one thing, they were more or less convinced that the Germans were going to win the war, and they thought that we were most misguided in fighting the Germans at all. They should. The real threat comes not from Germany, they said, but from Russia. And if only we would liaise with Germany and set up a real defence of Europe against Russia, it would be far more to the point than fighting us, they said. So that was the line they all took. Mm. And I challenged them about the Nazi concentration camps. And they said, it's all propaganda. We Germans, we never do such things as that. We're not such ogres as you like to make out. It's all propaganda. Mm. And they genuinely didn't believe all that I told them, that already the news had been coming through, unfortunately, then not even as much as it really turned out to be in the end. Mm. And they were all... They suggested, why don't you go home and see Churchill and tell him the true facts of Germany and what we're really fighting for and how we ought to bring this awful war to an end. Why are we fighting? We admire the British. And this is the sort of line they took. And said, you try and get home and see Churchill and make him realise what the real facts of Germany is. As a matter of fact, I had a long session with Colonel Petty because I had to tell him all of this. And there was a lot more about oil fields and various things like that, which they told me, which I thought could be some importance. And Colonel Petty made a lot of notes, but obviously nothing was done or nothing could be done.
It was probably passed back up the line of command.
It may have been. How far back, I don't know. But I know Colonel Petty... took it seriously, all the things I told him.
Well, there were departments in London who were interested in the state of German opinion, and obviously were very interested in knowing
really
what the mentality and outlook of members of the German army would
be. But remember, of course, this is the attitude of the doctors and the surgeons and not the fighting men. Mm. And there were one or two... Germans who for some reason or other came involved in the hospital. Perhaps they were men who had been wounded and were getting better.
Convalescing.
convalescing. And the Nazis were very different. They took a much more belligerent line, and they tried to shut up the Germans from speaking as they did. So there was a bit of a conflict between the medical and the fighting soldiers.
So you ran across sincere National Socialists as well as...
Not many of the latter, but mainly it was the Hermann Göring division that I was meeting. But I did meet some of the other officers. Am I going on too long about this?
No, do, please.
And I got to know them well. And I and all our officers, the Gordon's officers, were invited to a big party and concert which they were giving. This was after some weeks, of course, when they'd got themselves properly organised, well organised, incidentally. And they put on a marvellous show. There were some good singers and some very good comedians. And there was one comedian who gave an extraordinarily good imitation of Lord Haw Haw. So they knew about him and just imitated his voice perfectly. Oh, and incidentally, we, the officers who were invited, were treated as honoured guests and given them front seats and given a royal welcome, which was really remarkable in the circumstances. And we thoroughly enjoyed that.
What sort of things did they say, the Hermann Göring division officers, when you talked to them?
Well, they were very strict disciplinarians. And one item I might mention was every Sunday they had a very big church parade. We had a relatively small church parade, which was voluntary. Very good padre we had. That's another matter altogether, the question of the padre. And
yes.
So I can deal with that a little later if you wish. But what was I saying?
The German church.
Oh, yes, that's right. They were such wonderful singers. They knew all the hymns, and they completely outclassed us when it came to church services. And it seems so extraordinary that they seem quite devout Christians, and yet here we were, both praying for peace or praying to be spared, praying for victory. So I don't know what God can have thought of it up there, making in this extraordinary circumstance. Both sides ostensibly were Christian, but they seem much more devout than we were.
Well, there is scope for honest mistake.
Yes, certainly.
There's always a loophole.
Yes, that's right.
It's perfectly possible for two sides to sincerely believe they're fighting for the right thing.
Yes, yeah, I think that's the way it was. Incidentally, to mention the padres, we had a very fine padre. He was a Protestant. He was a Presbyterian, of course, as one would expect with us, and he was very good at keeping up in the front. But there was one, I must confess, in a different unit that I don't need to mention who he said he couldn't stand the sight of blood, so he had to stay in the rear, stay in B echelon and never get any further than forward. Contrast him, there was a Roman Catholic padre, I forget his name now, and he stole, in quotes, a motorbike. And he went roaring round, right up into the front line, helping the stretcher bearers with the wounded and giving them the last rites if they wanted to die. And he was a marvellous man.
Sounds as though the first one, who couldn't stand the sight of blood, was really in the wrong occupation.
I think he was, yes, yes. He shouldn't have been there at all. No, that's quite right.
Did your jocks take religion seriously, do you think?
Not terribly, I must confess they didn't. They had to give their religion, of course, and they all gave their religion as Presbyterian, and we sang hymns, we had our favourite hymns, but it wasn't what you call a very devout or moving occasion. It was more a sort of routine thing that one did on a Sunday if you weren't actually fighting.
Devotions in the field.
Yeah, that's right.
When you had that sort of improvised service, roughly what sort of attendance would you have?
I think perhaps if we weren't needed for our other duties, I think about a 90% would attend, perhaps without very great enthusiasm, but they just sort of tagged along with the rest, so to speak. Mm. I can't honestly say that there was any really strong religious feeling amongst the jocks. Mm. They, as I say, they loved certain hymns and they would choose those every time.
Which ones in particular were their favourites?
Yes, there was Jesus, Lover of My Soul, I think was their favourite. They had one or two others. I forget what they are now, though. Yes. So that, I was just about the prison camp. I think that, yes, we had one occasion when they were marching past and they were all singing Schubert songs. And they sang beautifully. Yeah. We couldn't do anything like that. I mean, we had no singers who could sing English or Scottish or Irish or Welsh songs. Pity. There's something I regretted at the time.
It was part of their training.
Yeah,
the German army.
I mean, all we could do was things like roll out the barrel, which got very, very. I mean, it's all right if there'd been many of them, but just to sing roll out the barrel every time you had something to sing at all, it was a bit monotonous. Mm. There were a few others, of course. Run, Rabbit, Run, a few, but they were all rather much the same. They weren't very patriotic.
Sound like music hall songs.
Yeah, yes, they were rather. Mm. But the First World War did much better. Mm. They had Tipperary and they had Well, I don't know. I mean, you know as well as I do all the lovely First World War songs there were.
When you were doing the training, you thought you were going to Sicily. Were you informed about what was going on there in the Sicilian?
No, we were just informed that our turn will come very soon now. Be ready for it.
Yes.
That's all. We didn't know where. But, of course, we obviously knew that Italy was possible, Sicily was possible, or we might even be packed up to some much further, farther away theatre of war. But Sicily and Italy were the two most likely, I think we thought.
How much warning did you have before you actually embarked your next move, and was there a reasonable period of grace?
We didn't actually move from Italy until about the beginning of December, and we actually spent Christmas in the toe of Italy, landed at Taranto.
Was that a dry landing on the
Yes, unopposed. There was no opposition there.
What condition was the town of Taranto in when you got there?
I think very quiet, very bleak. I don't think we went through the town at all. We just did a long walk, march, and we probably went round the town itself.
So you landed in the harbour but didn't go through the city.
That's right, I think that's what it was, yes. Mm-hmm. And eventually we landed a little village, I think about 25 miles north of the landing. We probably marched there, I think. Spinazzola. And that, of course, was unoccupied. The Italians were still our enemy at that time, but there weren't any Italian soldiers there at all. So all we found were just peasants.
How did they greet you when you arrived?
Very quietly, with respect. They, no boos or jeers or anything like that, but they just accepted us and looked the other way sort of thing to begin with.
You were not in contact with any enemy at that stage?
Not at all, no.
What did you do when you got to your village? Did you dig in to defend it, or were you simply...
No, we didn't have, we didn't do anything military at all. We just sort of set up a camp. And I think there were even a few tents available. So it was the first time we'd had any cover over our heads for many, many months, ever since we landed in Algiers. So it was nearly a year, I suppose, before we'd had anything over our heads.
Sounds as though it was real luxury in your town.
I think it was. We had a very pleasant Christmas, always, of course, with the threat that, right, you're here now, but you're not going to be quiet like this much longer. So we always had that hanging over our heads, what's going to be the next move and where and when. But I've described the Christmas, which was rather interesting, but it's not a military matter, it's just a matter of how we organised and let the jocks had as good a possible time as they possibly could.
And were you able to get your hands on any locally?
Yes, we got some chickens and that sort of thing, which we always paid for in one way or another. We didn't steal them, and I suppose we got a bit of local vegetables and the odd fruit here and there. Although it was winter, they obviously had a bit of fruit left over.
Was it cold in that part of Italy at that time?
It was very wet and not terribly cold. Mm. The cold came later.
When you're in the mountains.
That's right. Mm. But, it was just very damp and not very pleasant, but nothing really off-putting.
How long were you there before you started to move forward?
Well, I think we moved about January the 1st, so we must have been there, I suppose, about a fortnight from...
Where
including Christmas. And, of course, we kept on with our marches. And the pipe band played in the village square. That's the nearest we got with the Italians. They all came out and listened to the pipe band playing. I think they even cheered the band. And then, of course, we marched behind just to as part of our marching exercise. So it was all a very pleasant interlude, really. And at that stage, the training wasn't very intense. We just keep up to date, so we didn't lose any of our skills, made sure the weapons were absolutely clear and the ammunition was organized and all the food and all the necessaries were properly organized. So it was quite a busy time, one way and another.
Did you have any idea of what might happen next, you know, where you might be going? Had you got...
Well, we realized, of course, that the the rest of Italy was still controlled by the military, so we were up against first the Italians we knew, and then of course the Germans weren't far away, so we knew we'd got quite a bit of opposition from both armies. But we rather thought that the Italians weren't ever likely to be as formidable as the Germans ever were, and it turned out to be absolutely true.
Did you have any inkling that the Italians were negotiating for
no,
a change of side?
Not at all. No. It came as a complete surprise. Mm. Of course, that was after the Battle of Salerno, which we didn't take part in.
Did you hear about that battle?
We heard about Salerno, but only in outline. We didn't know anything really significant about it. We just knew that there had been this landing. When because, in fact, anticipating a little, when eventually we did go across the country, it was to Salerno we went for our final training with the Navy for combined ops with the landing craft, etc., for up-to-date training with the Navy.
Was there anything different about that training compared to what you'd done in the west of Scotland?
I don't think so. I think it was very much what we'd already done in Scotland.
Assault drills.
Yes, just to keep us up to date, make us quite well acquainted with the scramble nets going down into the... But the actual landing craft were much the same, about one landing craft per platoon. So, I think it was much the same.
Were there any large-scale rehearsal exercises for you?
Not large scale, no, just on more or less on battalion level, I think. Yes.
So you had some idea you were going to do another amphibious operation, did you?
Oh, yes, by then, of course. We didn't know where or when, but obviously we realised we're going to land somewhere, yes.
Mm-hmm. What was life like in that area, in the Salerno area?
By then, there were still signs of battle left, burnt out vehicles and that sort of thing, but there were no troops. The troops had all moved on after the mauling they got. But that's a very different story, a very different battle altogether. Terrible it was, by all accounts.
But by then they were moving north.
They'd all gone, yes. We didn't see any signs of life, only just burnt out guns, vehicles, what have you, that's all. Yes.
When did you first hear then that you were going to be going up to Anzio?
Not until we were actually aboard the ship.
When did you get embarked for that?
Well, on the, what was it, about the 22nd of January we actually landed, so it was about the 18th of January that we went into Naples Harbour, and it all started from there. But perhaps that's really part two. If we won't start on Anzio now, we could be going on for hours. So what do you think? It's now 3:15.